Good morning, everyone. Before I begin, I want to make a couple of announcements. First of all, every year I'm involved in a school that my father and I have been putting on for the past several years, and we're going to be doing that this next week, and I'm announcing that just to say to you that I'm going to be out of pocket, really, this whole week starts tomorrow, morning, afternoon, and evening. So I'll be involved in that. Ed also this year will be involved in that. Glad to have him with us. And so I just wanted to let you know that I'll be out of pocket in that. But hopefully that will be a good work and a beneficial work. Also, I wanted to just make this announcement. We have not yet announced the fact that we have a brand spanking new website. Go to www.valricoc.org. And you will see a very good-looking, user-friendly website. And I just want to make a comment and a commendation to several people about that. First of all, Bill Warren and also Dwayne Matthews have worked and put in a lot of work to update our website and to refashion it. And we just really appreciate that. Also, Bo Brake, who is not a member here but visits with us on Wednesday nights very often, he has given of his time and energy and has designed just the look of that. So it just looks really, really good. It's just real slick looking, and real proud of that and appreciate all those who have been involved in that. In fact, it's still being updated and improved, and Bill, in fact, right now is putting the membership directory on there. Not every single feature is yet up and running, but there are even some other things that we're talking about doing that will even make it better, and Bill's excited. He's like a kid with a new toy, and so it's just good. So we really appreciate all that, all the ones involved in that, and we think that that website now will really be able to do an awful lot of good. So just wanted to make that announcement to you. It's good to see everyone this morning. I wanted to begin this morning by looking with you at a passage of Scripture in Philippians chapter 2. In Philippians 2, the Apostle Paul says, "So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure." That's such a marvelous passage of Scripture. It's a passage that talks about God working in us and accomplishing marvelous things in us. It also is a passage that reminds us of our own individual responsibility before God. Because what Paul admonishes the Philippian brethren here is that they need to work out their own salvation. And certainly the implication of what he's saying is that even though God is working in us and through us to accomplish his task, it is not apart from our own free will. And it is not apart from our own responsibility to be the kind of people who conform to what God's teaching is. And ultimately, what we can look forward to is the salvation of our souls and all of those rich blessings that Jesus has procured for us. But it's all a matter of us exercising our free will to do those things that we need to be doing. And so in that sense, he says, you work out your salvation with fear and trembling. I want us to emphasize this morning that each individual person is individually responsible before God for whether or not they are going to take hold of the blessings of salvation or not. Each person has that as their individual responsibility. Another person's sin
can't condemn you. This is one of the positive aspects about this. The fact that we have our own individual responsibility, it first of all means something very good, that another person's sinfulness, that doesn't mean that somehow I'm going to come under judgment as far as God is ultimately concerned because of somebody else's failing. In fact, that is a principle that was emphasized by God back in Old Testament times. It's true that with the Israelites, God was having to deal with them on a national level, and therefore on a corporate level, and in some senses, when you're dealing with, say, a corporate group of people, the sins that the leadership might commit then cause ramification upon even some innocent ones in that nation. So in some sense, in dealing with a corporate national body, that's just inevitable. But God emphasized even then, through his prophets, ultimately what God's philosophy was about all of that. That God ultimately did not hold an individual responsible for somebody else's transgression. In Ezekiel 18, verse 20, he said, "The son will not bear the punishment for the father's iniquity, nor will the father bear the punishment for the son's iniquity. The righteousness of the righteous will be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked will be upon himself." So God was emphasizing to national Israel, here's my philosophy about judgment. I'm not going to hold you responsible for somebody else's sin. They're going to be judged for their sin. You're responsible for yourself. That's a great blessing and benefit, this whole concept of individual responsibility. And it's something that the New Testament then emphasizes for us as Christians. Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 17, "And if you address as Father the one who impartially judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay on earth." So God is someone who is going to judge us on the basis of our work eternally. And ultimately what that means is that we are going to stand before God as an individual, and somebody else's wrongdoing, God's not going to hold me accountable for that. He's going to hold me accountable for my own responsibilities and whether I've done what was right. And so that's something that is a very positive thing about individual responsibility. Another aspect of it is this: another person cannot obey God for you. You know, just in the same way that somebody else can't sin and you get blamed for it, somebody else can't obey God and you get credit for it. That doesn't work that way either. In Acts chapter 2, verses 38 through 41, there were 3,000 people approximately on the day of Pentecost who were baptized into Jesus Christ. There were a lot more people there than just those 3,000, though. There were thousands and thousands of Jews there on Pentecost, but 3,000 of them believed that Jesus was the Messiah, and 3,000 of those individuals chose to be baptized into Jesus Christ. But the fact that some of them in the crowd, 3,000 in total, were baptized into Jesus didn't mean that the people who didn't choose to be baptized, that they were somehow saved because they were all part of the same mob or something. That's not the way that it works. No, each individual had to choose to respond to the message of the apostles on that day, and each individual who chose to be baptized into Jesus then had his individual sins washed away by the blood of the Messiah who had died on that cross. And what we also need to understand from all of this is that when we're talking about our work in our Christian life, somebody else can't obey God for us and us somehow get credit for that. I want you to read with me, if you will, some verses from Revelation chapter 3, verses 1 and following. Because here in the Revelation to the Apostle John, Jesus addresses the church at Sardis. And I want you to note what he says. Verse 1, "To the angel of the church in Sardis write, he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars says this, I know your deeds, that you have a name, that you are alive, but you are dead. Wake up and strengthen the things that remain, which were about to die, for I have not found your deeds completed in the sight of my God. So remember what you have received and heard, and keep it and repent. Therefore, if you do not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you will not know at what hour I will come to you. Now watch verse 4. But you have a few people in Sardis who have not soiled their garments, and they will walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He who overcomes will thus be clothed in white garments, and I will not erase his name from the book of life, and I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Do you get the picture there? Here is a congregation of the Lord's people at Sardis, and there are a few of them who have not soiled their garments, who are living in accordance with the teachings of Jesus Christ, who are doing what was right. But here are all these other ones there in that church who are not living in accordance with Jesus' teachings. And you notice that even though he is addressing the congregation as a whole, he makes it clear that those few who have not soiled their garments, God's not going to hold them responsible on the one hand for the majority who weren't following the teaching of Jesus, nor is he somehow going to allow those in the church at Sardis who were not following the teaching to somehow get credit for a few good ones who were. It just doesn't work that way on either side of it. And what that really should impress upon us is that even when we are a part of a congregation where things are good and it's a good work, and there are good worship services, and there's good teaching and edification, and people are doing things and people are growing, if you're not, as an individual, doing your part and what God holds you responsible for doing, the fact that everybody else seems to be doing well, that's not going to somehow accrue to you. I think this is one of those things where intellectually, we all know this. But somehow, in the moment, it's real easy for us to become complacent and to somehow think that, well, if I'm part of a group that's just doing real good, since I'm part of it, then I must be doing real good. And maybe you are, but maybe you're not. It all depends on you. It doesn't depend on the rest of the people in the group. You know, we've talked sometimes about the good song service that we have and talk about our songs going up to God as a sweet savor and all of that. And the singing is very melodious and the singing is wonderful and it's uplifting and all of that. But if I wasn't paying attention during the song service, if my mind was somehow elsewhere and I'm really thinking about something else and I really wasn't in spirit worshiping God in spirit in a truthful manner, then the fact that the congregation worshiped real well today, that doesn't mean that God's going to give me any credit for that. Because God looks at us ultimately individually. And the fact that we had a very moving Lord's Supper, and I appreciate very much Isaac reading those passages of Jesus' crucifixion. There's no better way, in my judgment, to help people center their minds upon what we're trying to do with the Lord's Supper than to just read that kind of narrative from Scripture. And the fact that we had a very wonderful and moving Lord's Supper for the group, if I have my mind elsewhere and I'm thinking about what I want to do here and there and I'm not thinking about my Lord and his death and his sacrifice and where I need to make corrections in my life, then as far as God is concerned, it was meaningless for me. And God didn't give me any credit for that.
And it may be that every other single individual worshiped God acceptably today, but if I didn't, God isn't going to treat me as if I had. And that's just the nature of Christianity. That's the nature of how God deals with us. And again, that's why Paul said to the Philippians, you need to work out your own salvation in fear and trembling. Because ultimately, it is this kind of individual responsibility. Folks, it's real easy for us, even though we know this, it's real easy for us to lose sight of it. It's real easy for people to, sometimes when they're talking with others, to, and they ask, well, where do you worship? Oh, I worship at this church. Oh, you worship, I've heard that that's a good church. Oh, yes, that's a good church, you know, and all that, you know, and everything. And it's real easy, since we're a part of that, to just think, well, then that makes me right in God's eyes. But that's just not the way God views it. And so we need to understand that God does not view it that somebody else's obedience somehow accrues to our account. It just doesn't work that way. It's amazing how many people will think that it does. I've talked to a lot of people who, when you've addressed some problems in their life, they're not coming to services the way they should, or they're not doing things that they should be doing properly in their spiritual life as a Christian. I've talked to a lot of people over the years who've said to me or have said to the other elders things like, you know, well, I was raised a Christian, and just keep talking about that as if somehow the fact that their parents were Christians and that they somehow, that gives them a pass. I guess that's what they think. I don't know. But that's just not the way the Lord views it. Okay. Well, if we can understand all of that, though, that's all one extreme where somebody needs to understand that individual responsibility and therefore what that means for them. Well, that's one side of the spectrum. But I do want us to understand this, that part of our individual responsibility is to see an obligation that we have to other people and not just ourselves. You know, sometimes you can so highlight one point that it makes a person go to an extreme and then lose sight of something and become imbalanced. You can so emphasize the individual aspect of New Testament Christianity, that God judges us as an individual, an individual, and an individual, that you maybe forget that God gives individuals collective responsibilities. God gives us responsibilities to look toward other people and to see the needs of other people and to work with other people. That's part of what God gives us as our individual task. In fact, one very key aspect of that is in the local congregation. When you look at such passages as 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 17, here's what you read. As the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each in this manner, let him walk, and so I direct in all the churches. That's an interesting passage, and I cite that for this reason. It's a passage that emphasizes the individual and how the individual needs to walk. But Paul says, I direct this, or so I direct all the churches. So it also necessarily implies this corporate identity that an individual is part of a local congregation and he's meeting together with and working with other Christians of like precious faith in his local area. And so Paul can talk about all these churches, all these congregations. Now, the individuals in them all have their personal responsibilities, but what you see in the New Testament is always individual Christians who have banded together with others in their local area, and they're these unified groups.
And the reason why I emphasize that is that there are some Christian people who have so emphasized the individual aspect of our responsibility before God that they act as if they don't have any responsibility in regard to a local congregation. That's just not true. In fact, when you look at the New Testament, you see that wherever the gospel was preached and wherever individuals were baptized into Jesus Christ, they then worked and worshiped together with others who have been baptized into Jesus Christ in their local area. That's always the case. And yet we have some Christians in our day who just seem to minimize this whole concept of local church membership. There are some Christians who will go for long periods of time and not work or worship with a congregation, and yet they will say, oh, well, but I'm still a Christian, and I'm very spiritually minded, but they kind of view it as just their own personal prayer life and what they do at home as an individual, and they may be very prayerful and very diligent in their personal Bible study, and yet I've talked to some who yet don't become a part of a local congregation, as if somehow that's really not important. But you never read in the New Testament of someone who was there with other Christians and yet not meeting with them and not working with them and just kind of doing everything on his own. That's not God's plan. That's not the concept of the church that God established. There are some people who kind of have the idea that they don't have to be a member of a local congregation. They can just kind of be a Christian at large. That's not the New Testament pattern. That's not the New Testament concept. That's not what the first century apostles of Jesus Christ were ever teaching. But I'll tell you something else, though, that kind of dovetails from all that. It isn't just a matter of making sure that you're a name on the books of local church membership. We need to realize this. In Hebrews chapter 10, verses 23 and 25, he says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another." Here's a passage that in a nutshell explains why it is that God deemed it so important for Christians, these individuals, to band together and to regularly associate and worship together. He says it's so they can consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. So they can encourage one another, he says. And that's what all of us need. That's absolutely what all of us need. So it isn't simply a matter of having your name on the roster, or you have, quote, placed membership, or you're on that membership directory list that's handed out every couple of months, or that Bill's going to put on the website. It isn't just that. It's a matter of you actively then doing what you need to be doing with other Christians to encourage them and to stimulate them to love and good works, and in turn, they're doing that for you. That's what God's plan is. And when you realize all that, here's what it should help us see. The problem in the fact that some people minimize local church involvement. They may not minimize the membership aspect of it. Their name is on the roster, but they're just not really involved. They're not involved. And when you look again at what the New Testament is teaching in regard to God's will for all of this, God never had as his concept that there would be individuals who were just a name on a roster, and therefore a member of a local church. No, the concept you see always in the New Testament is these Christians who are actively assembling regularly and encouraging each other, and every individual is involved in that work collectively, stimulating one another to love and good deeds, giving encouragement, receiving encouragement. That's God's plan. And a lot of Christians just kind of don't see that as a real need. Again, it's this overemphasis on me as an individual. It's kind of in their minds, it's really only about me and what I want, and okay, I have a very minimal responsibility to those people in the local church. And those are the ones who don't, frankly, attend all that often, who don't participate in all the assemblies, don't take advantage of all the assemblies, or who maybe even are there just kind of are so much on the periphery, they're just not that involved. And you know what I'm talking about. And the whole concept, the whole problem there is an overemphasis on just me and my individualism. I just see it as me, and I don't really identify myself and really see myself as part of this group, and therefore really having responsibility. And it's just, well, the group is just kind of something I'll kind of have a minimal kind of connection with it, but just not really be all that involved. Okay, that's not what New Testament Christianity is. That's not the picture that the apostles were painting. That's not what the teaching of Jesus is all about. And so the whole concept is that we need to work out our own salvation in fear and trembling. But a major part of that is our involvement with the local assembly of people and the relationship that we have with them. And that is absolutely part of God's plan and His purpose. And God knows that we all need that as individuals. Thank God for His wisdom in all this. Because I'll just tell you quite frankly, I don't think I could do it just by myself. I'll scratch that. I know I couldn't do it by myself. That sense of being part of a group who together are hand in hand trying to walk to heaven, that is such an encouragement. Just knowing that one is really part of a group like that, active part of a group like that. And then just all those occasions when you are down, when you are in a spiritual valley and you have the relationships with other Christians and you have those occasions of worshiping together and you have those opportunities to talk to your fellow Christians, whether it's in the assembly or outside of the assembly, about the problems that you're going through, to get that kind of strength and encouragement, that is absolutely imperative. It's for me. And I think it's that way for each one. And God knew that it was. And that's why it's so important for us to not allow ourselves to have a concept of, well, I can just be a Christian on the periphery. That's not good enough. That doesn't cut it. That's not what God's plan was. And if that's what we're thinking, we just haven't gone far enough in our understanding of what being a Christian is all about. It's about individual responsibility, sure. But it's also a fact that part of our individual responsibility relates to the group, to others. And we need them, and they need us, and God knows that's the way it is. And God's going to hold us
responsible on Judgment Day individually for whether or not we really participated in his plan in the local church. Something to think about there. I hope that can challenge us, challenge all of us. We all need it.
Thank you so much for listening to me this morning. I wonder if there's someone who needs to respond in some way to the gospel of Jesus. Can we assist you? Can we help you? Whether you need to be baptized into Jesus Christ or whether you're a Christian who's had some problems in your life that we can assist you with, pray for you. Whatever be your need, won't you come while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement?